welcome to The Book Show. Few artists have built a career as fiercely independent or as influential as Ani DiFranco. In her latest, The Spirit of Ani, Reflections on Spirituality, Feminism, Music, and Freedom, DiFranco turns inward while still engaging the wider world. The book, structured as an extended dialogue with anthropologist Lauren Coyle Rosen, blends conversation, reflection, and archival material to trace her artistic journey. We'll talk with Ani DiFranco coming up. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Ani DiFranco has spent more than three decades redefining what it means to be an independent artist. A Grammy-winning singer, songwriter, poet, and activist, she founded her own label, Righteous Babe Records, at just 19, and has since released more than 20 albums blending folk, punk, and political urgency into a singular voice. Her new book, The Spirit of Ani, Reflections on Spirituality, Feminism, Music, and Freedom, extends that voice into a deeply personal and philosophical space. For this edition of The Book Show, we spoke to Ani DiFranco as part of the New York State Writers Institute's Creative Life series, a sold-out event at Page Hall in Albany, New York. It is a pleasure to welcome Ani DiFranco to this week's book show.
The book looks beautiful.
Oh, cool.
Now, when you say The Spirit of Ani, the subtitle, Reflections on Spirituality, Feminism, Music, and Freedom, when you think of spirit, what does that mean to you? What does that evoke to you?
Here we go. gee whiz. It means the light beings that we are, I think. I think you're eternal, my friend, and I think we all are. And these meat puppets that we're animating right now are just one of the games that we play of so many. So when I think of spirit, that's what I think of, our eternal selves that may or may not be embodied. And I think there are spirits you can see and have relationships with on this earthly plane, and then there's others you can't see unless you have special abilities.
Do you feel that, like, we're in the good part, being a meat puppet?
I mean, I'm enjoying it myself.
Yeah.
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 It is a lot of fun. But from what I hear, it's nothing compared to going back home. I'm fascinated by NDEs. Does anybody follow, or maybe somebody has had one, a near-death experience, they're called? This is sort of how I fall asleep at night. I listen to one story after another of people who have died and come back into the same body. They're all quite unique stories, and yet there are so many commonalities. And one of the commonalities is, wow, being released from the cage of this body was so incredible. And then coming back into it felt so constrictive. So good stuff to come.
You talk about an experience in the book about a near-drowning experience that you had. Wait, was that a near-death experience? Was that close to it?
No, I did not leave. I did not. Yeah, near-death experience is a weird term because it is a death experience.
Yes, you're gone for a moment.
You're gone for a moment. Sometimes many moments for some people. But no, that was just panicking and swallowing salt water.
I do that most mornings from 9 to noon.
Oh, yeah.
Let me ask about the idea of you at night falling to sleep to these near-death experience stories. Does that inflict odd dreams or nightmares?
Not nightmares. I mean, maybe I did have a near-death experience, so to speak, once. And this is all by way of saying why I do not have nightmares about dying. I'm not afraid of dying. Because when my father died, I was very close with my father. And I was not in the room with him when he died, but he came in the room with me. It was an extraordinary experience that I will never forget. And it was an experience of absolute peace, bliss. It was the most beautiful feeling I've ever felt.
And what a lovely way to end the earthly relationship.
He was a lovely guy. And I do, well, you know, I was just going to say that that was his last great gift. But then I met him in dreams, which I think is another way that even us without extraordinary abilities can connect with spirit. After he passed, in dreams, we continued to converse. I really do believe that. It wasn't just memories or inventions. I learned new things in those conversations. I believe our relationship continued.
When you say you learn new things, do you investigate those further to see their truth, or do you take them at face value?
I'm going to fact check you, Dad.
Yeah. Well, I only say that because I've had those dreams where I think something, and then I'm like, oh, I wonder if that is a thing, and then invariably it is.
I did not verify, per se. But
you just trusted your dad. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, but I do believe that your inkling, there's something to it.
The book is beautiful. We shouldn't mention, the book is a conversation between you and Lauren Coyle Rosen.
Yeah.
And how did that come about?
She just called my people. It was her big idea. I mean, I guess she had read my memoir and was curious about the spiritual themes that came up in that story, and she wanted to explore more with me. I don't know. I was having a yes day, so.
It's a series of conversations that you have on a whole realm of very interesting, in-depth topics.
Yeah, and many people encouraged us after we had these series of conversations. Many people encouraged her and us to take it from conversation mode into, you know, just pontificating on the page. And we decided we had to push real hard to keep it conversational. And it just felt right because so much of what we ended up talking about was how existence is about conversation. You know, I believe why we embody to begin with, to have relationships.
The conversation on the page is fascinating. There is an audio version.
Yeah.
Is that the actual conversations?
No, that was so weird and meta. Having, like, reading, playing yourself, talking 2 years ago.
Don't tell Lauren, but you're better at it than she is.
Oh, shucks. Wow, you listened to it. Yeah.
No, because I was thrown, because I thought for a minute it was actually from the audio of the
interviews.
Yeah,
so weird. We didn't even do it record together. So, you know, I'm recording my side, and then she recorded her side later. So, yeah.
Oh, that's really
imperfect process.
Did you feel her spirit?
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Let me read something that you said here. This is about you on stage, beginning of the book. For me, my mind is really busy much of the time, worrying, doubting myself, beating myself up, thinking that I look like shit, that I didn't say that thing right, that I'm not singing well or whatever. Then it's the same thing when I look at my recordings. I think, oh God, that sucks and that sucks. That's cringy and that's insanely cringy. I feel deep, burning regret and shame, and yet in all those moments, in all those songs, recorded or alive, people are connecting. People are present there with me. I have to just trust that somehow, even though I know I suck, that there's something coming through me that's real or useful. That's a beautiful way of thinking of it. That obviously wasn't something you felt initially on stage, I wouldn't think.
Well, you know, it really did kick in pretty quick.
Yeah.
I mean, I was blessed to, even like in Buffalo, New York, playing in the Essex Street pub, you know, there was somebody, some chick, two beers to the wind, who would just start crying. And then we would start hugging afterwards. And there was always that point of connection that I would find when I opened my mouth and let my truth out. So it's carried me here.
Right. When you're doing it, is the experience often, I mean, obviously if you're on tour and you're doing the same songs and it's there is a repetition to this,
yeah.
But it's always a different experience then of
yeah.
looking out and seeing who you're connecting with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, every moment, a different experience. That's the fun thing about being a meat puppet. And and the amazing thing about live performance, because you can, I mean, I've been doing it for a few years now, and I'm just so deeply into the level of communication that is possible. You can sing an old song that you sung 10,000 times, but you sing it from a new place, and even within the same words, you can comment on that person that won't shut up and make everybody laugh, and you can comment on the comment. You can, you know, spoken conversation, and when we interact with each other, we can communicate on so many levels at once, and so I believe songs in performance can be kind of fractal that way.
Don't you think we're better at conversation than we give ourselves credit for?
I mean, I guess if we are brave and we are safe, then yeah, the possibilities are really, yeah, this is a world where especially young folks, you know, living in the screens and there's a lot of avoiding conversation now.
Right.
But I agree with you. I think we're better at it than we think we are.
And you mentioned bravery, but also safety, and that's a big thing too. And that's I think it takes many of us a long time to feel safe.
And it's who was it who said you're a whole other person when you're afraid? So to have a real conversation, you have to first be in a position to, yeah.
When did you feel, as you were going on stage, I mean, there's a comfort that comes with it, right? I mean, is that gradual?
Eventual, maybe.
Yeah.
Perhaps futuristic, even. I'm nervous right now.
Yeah.
I'm 35 years into this game, and I don't know why. I always have fear of failure.
So you know your fear. You know what you're afraid of is failure.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Is that the word? I mean, failing myself. I'm really good at criticizing myself, and I always feel like, you know, I've got this chronic 3 blocks later syndrome. Every time I get off stage, I think I should have said it like that. Ugh. In that moment, it would have been better to do that. Mm. And it's endless.
But the woman in the audience who's had 2 beers and is crying, does that help alleviate some of that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And even as you were reading that little snippet from that book, so this is 2 years ago, me talking.
These conversations.
It took that long, yeah, to get it out in the world as things do. And I feel like I've grown since the woman who's speaking in that book. And one of the things, just as you were speaking, I was thinking, I think I've finally, at 55 years old, gotten to the place where I'm not going to say that anymore. I'm not going to say my shit sucks because somebody else, I'm thank you for your patience. Especially because it's like putting down somebody else's thing. Somebody else's thing that walked with them, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think often we can be self-deprecating. We can think, and it's a way, as a coping mechanism. But it can also veer us into a reality that isn't true.
Yeah. I mean, all the smart people say self-love is the prerequisite.
Yeah.
To bestowing love on others. And I'm just getting there.
You write about your dad in the book, and you talk about of how you get through a tough childhood. You say, I was on my own in a lot of ways, but it was not even something I could necessarily control or stop. It was not exactly a choice. Again, when I say I can relate to my dad and his technique for surviving the last decade of his life, it's because when I would go to see him, he would be happy to see me. He wasn't wallowing and being all torn up at the time in between visits. He was happy to see me and could connect in joy with me and love. I think his dementia was part of preserving a kernel of his soul, his spirit, and keeping it intact for the moments when it could come alive. That is beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, dementia doesn't... My dad had dementia for a lot of years before he transitioned, before he passed on. And it never scared me. It never scared me. It made total sense to me. You know, I think the imagination is a lifesaver, you know?
Yeah. When he passed on, did you feel as though... And I mean, you spoke about this at the beginning, but did you feel as though there was a... I mean, people say, oh, he's gone to a better place.
Hmm.
But in some sense, yeah, absolutely, right?
Absolutely. So no, I hear. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. Trump.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah, think about it. I love the... when you're talking about, this was the case, certainly with your memoir, and you're talking about the craft, and you're talking about the life and where it brings you into songwriting. I'm struck when you say that you wouldn't, in some parts of that I read, that you wouldn't say that now, 2 years later. Does that impact the songwriting? Does that impact the voice that you have of what you want to convey in a song?
You know, I haven't really been writing Ani songs lately. I've been writing in the voices of others. I've been working on a musical. And yeah, I was actually just spent this last week in New York workshopping the material with a bunch of awesome actors and a director, and it's all starting to feel real.
And your participation will be what in that? I mean, will it be like the Ani DiFranco musical in the sense of the...
No, it's a made-up story.
Well, right, not about your life, but you will have the credit for writing the songs and...
I'm writing the whole damn thing.
Yeah. So what sparked that?
A lady in Vermont by the name of Carol.
Oh, what was Carol up to?
It was Carol's. Carol is running this theater in Vermont called Northern Stage, and she called me years ago and said, hey, you want to do a thing? I think her original proposal was to do a jukebox musical with my work, and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then I called her back like, that's nothing against you, but that's gotta suck, so... I don't know. And then she said, well, how about we do something new? And it's been years. I've been running her up and down poles, round, blind curves.
So, okay, this brings up a couple of... This brings up a couple of questions. Yeah. One is, I don't know if you're at liberty to say, but what is the story that the songs are around?
Okay, here we go.
Okay.
Okay. It's the story of a family. And both of the children, one dies very young of a fever, of a sickness, NDE. She comes back a seer, as many people who leave their body and then come back to it are. She has a younger brother who is a nonverbal autistic. He also communicates with spirit. They develop a telepathic thought-sharing connection. It actually explores many aspects of spirit and consciousness and life and death. Stuff like that.
That's beautiful.
I hope so.
Hard to believe that would come out of Vermont.
But you know, I'm in a sort of a latent panic. Carol is in just a full-on panic, though. But for me, this is really the first time that I've tried to write someone else's song.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. That must be surreal.
Tricky. Dangerous, scary.
How many actors on stage?
11.
Okay. And how many that would sing, that would have?
Half of them sing. This week that I was just in New York doing this workshopping of the material, I saw at the end of the schedule, there was a daily schedule, the call with the actors and the creative team and the this and that and that. And then the last thing on the last day said proof of concept. And I guess one of the concepts that needed to be proven before people continued to stay behind this thing is that every character on stage is played by two people. One is the human body and one is the light body. And it's tricky. It's a tricky business, but I guess I proved my concept because they haven't left the room yet.
Well, that's good. Yeah, excellent. These things take a lot of time, as you mentioned with the book, but I mean, you have no idea when this will start to roll as it is.
Yeah, well, no, that was just act one that we workshopped for a week, and now I got to really dive into act two. But also, I think the next step is a lot of outreach, especially to autistic folks and their families, because this is not my lived experience, so I want to get it right according to them.
Although you feel like you've gotten the other experience of the seer because of what you've experienced and what you were telling us earlier.
Well,
to a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, that character, it's the daughter in the family, and that character is probably the one that I am closest with personally.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And and when you hear the songs coming out of somebody else, are you just like, what?
I cried all week. It was amazing. It was amazing. It's been living in my head for years, and it came out in the air, and it moved, and it sang, and it flowed. Well, it didn't, and then we made it flow. And and the actors were so generous, you know, but they, and I watched them get more into it as the week went on until we were all in it together.
Did this coincide, the idea, as you said, you've been living with it for years, did this coincide with your father pass?
No. No.
Was there a prior?
No, my dad passed many, many years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is...
After that. Yeah. But, I mean, you had that experience.
I had that experience. And I've had other experiences of telepathy. You know, I think we all do, really. It's just we are led to believe that that is not true. So if our truth is not affirmed in the world around us, it's just so hard to know it. You know, your dog knows when you're coming home. And it ain't because he can smell you 30 miles away.
No, they know.
It's thought sharing. Yes.
No, when my wife works at home, I come home, and when I make the turn, a mile and a half away.
Yeah.
The dog gets up and goes over to the. I mean, that's
here's
that's,
your thought. Here's your mind. Knows your intention. Yeah. Absolutely. I was on tour in Europe once, and I woke up in the middle of the night in my bunk crying for my cat Carlos. And he was sick.
And you knew that.
And I knew that.
And does it give you a helpless feeling, or do you feel relieved that you are connected in that moment?
Well, that was a terrible feeling to not be by him because I knew he needed me. But I think it's an incredible feeling to know that we're all connected, to know that we can... If this reality is affirmed, and Western scientific materialism and Judeo-Christian religions make room for reality to be bigger than the story we've been telling up till now, the possibilities are endless.
You say in the book, I feel like people project a lot of things onto me, whether they are the projections of the dominant culture and patriarchy, or the projections of a feminist or queer subculture or whatever, but maybe there's something in there. How does that feel of when that is projected, and does that, realizing 2 years ago, do you care about that as much as you used to?
I think I'm putting distance, yeah. For instance, working towards this musical, I know that I will get hate, but I think I'm preparing myself. I think I'm more prepared than I was in years past for the judgment to come.
And it isn't because the judgment is valid. It's because we allow people to judge us, right? Or something like that?
Well,
I mean, there's the forum.
I think... coincidence, as I put distance between myself and other people's judgments and expectations, opinions, ideas of who I am or should be, I'm also putting distance between myself and my own judgments of other people. In fact, it was an experience of being canceled on the internet that helped me really start down that road. Feeling myself so pushed down by other people, I don't even know how to describe it in words, but it was just this just visceral experience of being beneath so many people. And it altered me, and it made me recognize the moment I began to, in some way, in my head, put myself above someone else. It was a real, real strong lesson.
Ani DeFranco's new memoir is The Spirit of Ani, Reflections on Spirituality, Feminism, Music, and Freedom. It is published by Akashic Books. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LeDuc. Write to us at book@wamc.org. Thanks to the New York State Writers Institute. Major support for The Creative Life is provided by the University at Albany Foundation, with additional support from University Auxiliary Services. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.